and some X-rated things happen, like...
But here's the point. Well, you don't have to say if you're embarrassed. But anyway, so they get in the cab. Did you just go straight to oral sex in the cab?
No, we were making out.
You made out, and then, boom, he's like somehow curled on the ground,
down
all six,
there,
six of them.
Like,
yeah.
Whoa.
But then tell them what happened after that, which is more interesting to me. Not more interesting, but, you know, tell them what happened
when
after
we went back to the room.
Back to, yeah.
And she's blowing at my phone, and I'm like, I gotta get to my phone, and here he is trying to have sex with me. And I'm like, I can't have sex with you.
Yeah, tell him why.
Because I had to go back to my friends. I'm like, I don't know you. I don't know who you... Huh?
You get attached.
Oh, yeah. I was like, yeah, I have to have sex when I get attached to people. I don't like having sex with just no feeling, just randomly.
Because, like, Erica, like, that guy's, like, her property. After she has sex with him, so she doesn't want to feel protective over her. So
no,
like,
I hate that. I hate, like, you have to be mine. You have to be somewhat committed to me, I guess. I just hate that.
Okay, but also, more than that, too, your friends were calling you to get back to your friends.
Yes, I did. I was like, I have to go back. There's no way I'm going to get stuck here. I'll take you home. I was like, no, I live an hour away. You will not take me home. So I'll take you home. I was like, no. He's all, fuck. So I'll take you home. And I was like, no. I was like, I gotta go. I gotta find them.
Right, and here's sort of like some thoughts on the situation. Some of you guys agree. So, you know, when Jack and I pulled over in the car, I think he kind of, like, scooped you away.
And then for him to take you away from him.
Right.
Have his fun.
But in actuality, you know, the point is your friends just want to make sure you were safe. So two mistakes I felt like he made was, one is he didn't meet and interact with your friends. Like, maybe you guys had met him and you guys had liked him a little bit.
I didn't like him. No, I meet him and he's like, whoa, how are you tonight? You know what I mean? Who are they, Adam? Like, just act on that. I'm like, ew, he reminds me of the guys that you hear that come in. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm talking about work right now.
And the second thing is, if, like, he had kind of interacted, he could have, like, just come back here. You guys could have hung out.
He made himself,
like,
come off as being really weird and shady by just taking her away like that.
Right, so maybe he got, like, maybe he had, like, a cab adventure that he'll remember, but in the end, he didn't really get to, like, he could have been hanging out with you again. It could have been, like, a, you know, it could have been either a deeper thing or, like, a more regular thing, but by sort of, like, rushing for the goalpost, he kind of blew.
Like, even how he was like, fuck, when you said you wouldn't play with him. Like, who does that? What kind of reaction is that?
I don't know. He can be home. He could stay
home. Yeah, because it's all about not making someone uncomfortable and kind of make you and your friends uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I think as far as meeting her friends, I think the key there is, like, I think when a girl meets a guy, her friends really want to know that the guy likes her, not just because she's physically attractive, but there's something really unique that he finds in her. I think if he can show her friends that there's a reason he likes her beyond what she looks like, even there's, you know, a real genuine connection. I think that's a big part of it as well. That makes the friends feel comfortable. So I don't know, how do you feel about that? And feel free to tell me if I'm full of shit.
No, I don't think you're full of shit at all. But I mean, I think that you can tell when someone, everyone has like an intention, like when they go out or when they do something, like, you know, headspace, like we don't say. So some guys just want to hook up and some guys want to find a girlfriend, some guys want a wife, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like all my friends have something really special about them, which is why I'm their friend. Like they have like a really good quality, because I don't know, like I really don't like to surround myself with people who are like unconfident and like always unsure and it's weird, you know?
Yeah.
So I want to make sure that whatever guy Erica ends up with sees that in her, like, right away. Because I saw it right away. Me and my sister both see that in people right away, too. Like, we see, like, their quality, like, the really good qualities.
Yeah. And I do think that's part of it, is, like, find a reason, something special and unique about that person. If you can really find that, I think that's how we should really base our sexual interest on, not just what somebody looks like. Because I think other things, confidence can be sexy. Creativity could be sexy, all those things that you obviously see in your friends as well. She's what, a tough girl?
She's a Marine.
She's like way better than
Tim. Oh, she is? Okay. She's a very quiet Marine today, which I like, which is sexy.
She wasn't last night from what I hear when she wanted to leave. But the other point, too, is you have obligations as friends. You want to make sure your friend obligations are fulfilled, that you've been a good friend and that person knows you've been a good friend.
Because, you know what, a part of me, when Erica disappeared, a part of me just thought, you know what, if she's not going to answer her phone, fine, screw her anyway. Like, I could just leave her, and then she can just take a cab home, and then she could call me, come pick her up, because I'm trying to be a good friend here by calling her over and over again, and she's being really considerate by not calling me back.
Right.
Like, that was the drug side of me. Like,
that was the drug side of you?
Yeah, exactly. But then I was like, no, I have to take care of her. I'm like the mommy of the group. I'm
right.
So, like, internal. I really am.
Right.
Everybody knows.
Responsible one.
Oh, you're so responsible. I was calling you, like, 50 million times and weren't answering your phone.
Thanks. It's very useful to the guys while you guys argue. We hope that helps. But this is what's going on. This is true. Like, these friend relationship dynamics are more important than the stranger who approaches someone in a club, no matter how.
Exactly. This man has no value to us. We don't know him. He seems a stranger.
Yeah.
Yes, just weirdo.
That's honestly, that's fascinating, but I think guys will go back to each other. Yes.
No offense.
But seriously, that, I hope, like, there's an awesome subtext there, and, like, and that's kind of the social dynamic that you're working with.
Make a relationship with a friend. Make sure you make a very good relationship with a girlfriend.
Right, and that's why, like, that little thing, the best friends test, which, you know, is kind of a nice thing, because the point that I kind of make is people are out, like, maybe guys are out to meet women, but girls, most people are out to, like, strengthen their bond with each other. That's why you guys go out. You want to, like, come home in the morning better friends than when you went out.
But you know what you do that's different from what any other guy Jackie's ever dated has done, which is why all of our friends love you to death.
Uh-huh.
Like, I've never seen any friend react, oh my God, I love him. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Everyone's just like, where's Neil? How is everything with Neil? You know? Because you make a conscious effort to make friends with Jackie's friends.
Right.
And you relate to them in some way. You make conversation with them. You're not just like, oh, hi, how are you? Do you want a glass of water?
Right.
You mean, like, it's not just like that polite, like, oh, I have to do that. I know. It's bottled, exactly. But you're not just doing it because you, like,
right.
you feel like, because you have to. Just cause,
right.
like, I don't know. You make it feel like, acknowledge.
And Joy, so far, like, she's batting 100 with on the friend list. They all have something like funny about him.
I think, you know, like, a lot of it comes back to just people skills. It comes
right.
back to being a decent person,
right.
being able to find unique qualities in other people, and even
right.
being able to put yourself out there a little bit as well.
Yeah, and
do
I think,
those things.
And I think the thing that made me pick the stuff up quicker and the thing that made you very well is, like, we're naturally curious about other people.
Yeah.
We're naturally, like, interested in other people.
That's true, yeah.
So when someone walks up and is talking to you and you know, like, they just don't give a shit or they're just ripping lines, they're just trying to stay in
mm-hmm.
in the ring.
Yeah.
So you can sense their bad intentions.
Right, exactly.
Like,
yeah,
wrong.
Exactly. And we're going to leave every interaction with a guy or a girl or with whatever happens,
mm-hmm.
like, trying to have learned something funny or interesting or, like, got
right.
some sort of humor enjoyment out of it.
Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
Cool.
Maybe we could go back to what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
As far as, like, you know, Love That was talking about buying girls drinks
right.
and my thoughts on that. I think, you know, to me, it's a rarity when I actually hear a girl say, oh, buy me a drink. I don't think that happens as much as it used to. I think, you know, it's a little bit of a different dynamic. But I think that, to me, that's a demand. And I think that's okay. I think a lot of guys deal with demands poorly in that they feel taken aback. They end up lecturing the girl. They say no.
Right.
And it just creates a really bad vibe. When somebody demands something from me, I always say yes. I would love to do that. And I think this is what sort of maybe Love Job is trying to get to, but
right.
doesn't quite understand about my ideas. And I think there's a certain time and a place for everything. There is a time for you to buy a girl a drink. Maybe after you get to know her.
Right.
Right? And so I think...
Or like a year into the relationship.
A year into a relationship. Maybe after you've been married and had kids. But I think what the thing to say there is, yes, I would love to after I get to know you better.
Right.
And I think that little line like there really is... I found it very helpful for me in a lot of things
right.
in life. Is saying... You know, yes, I still want to have this good vibe with you. I will do that, but I'm just going to tell you it's going to be later. And it's worked for me in a lot of ways.
StyleLife.com presents Style Life Academy. StyleLife.com presents Style Life Academy.
For instance, I was in Hollywood not too long ago, and I saw these bums on the street, the young kind of kids, and they asked me for money, and I said, you know what, I'll catch you tomorrow, right? And it was a good experience for both of us. They, you know, got a smile from them, made me smile. Unfortunately, I just happened to see them the next day, and they're like, hey, there's the guy, you owe some money. So I had to give them some money, but I really like the idea of just putting something where it belongs in the timeline, sort of saying, in the future, I will do that for you. It just creates it's a nice moment there.
One of my favorite ideas of yours is, you know, is hooks, and can you discuss what hooks are?
Hooks. Hooks are kind of like a headline. If you read the paper, if you read... you know, whatever your favorite paper, maybe it's the New York Times, which you used to write for. If you read the top of the articles, it just doesn't tell you factually what the story is. It's a hook. It's something that's really interesting. It's an interesting bit of the story. Like, you start off the game, you start off with a very – you don't start off, like, at the beginning. You kind of start off the middle, right? You start off at an interesting part, and you kind of cut it off and leave people hanging a little bit, and they want more. I think a lot of people a lot of guys do this, and you girls could probably tell me if this is true or not. A lot of guys tell these long-winded stories,
mm-hmm.
right, which no one is really that interested in. I don't really like long-winded stories, but if I'm going to tell a story, I'd like to headline it first. I like to say, hey, that reminds me of, well, I shouldn't tell you that because it's the most embarrassing moment of my life, right? And then they want to know what the story is, and I give them little bits of the story at a time.
Yeah.
I don't want to push the whole story on them. I want them to know more. So, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, like it's kind of like telling a joke, how you have to only explain certain parts. Like, someone told me there's, like, 3 parts to a joke, and, you know, you have to, like, be really careful with it. Otherwise, it just gets really boring, and it's really awkward, and everyone's just like, okay, like, shut up now. So, it's the same thing goes when it comes to telling a story, too. You know what I mean? Like, you have to only, like, include, like, certain parts. Like, I have a girlfriend of mine who takes forever just to say something that would have taken less than a minute because she stops and she starts thinking out loud. You know what I mean? A lot of people do that. Wait, no. Did he wear that color shirt? No, I don't think he wore that color shirt. No, actually, you know what I mean? Like, they add...
Sure, yeah.
The other interesting part of hooks, and I think it's really interesting, is we always tell guys not to ask right away, like, what do you do for work and what's your name? Because, Jackie just said.
Don't ever ask, like, so, what do you do? Blah, blah, blah. That's so boring. It's so repetitive. Everybody asks the same exact question, and that makes you very uninteresting.
No, guys ask girls that.
Makes you horribly uninteresting. It's supposed to be different in order to get the girls' attention.
And Juggler has a very interesting twist on that. He's like, if you want to ask that, he wants you to lead with a hook. In other words, and I'm now trying to, like, quote your ideas in terms and get them wrong, but he kind of says instead to say, you know, say you're having conversations, like, in my line of work, we don't do that kind of thing. And then it leaves you to say, well, what's your line of work?
Yeah.
Or he might say, well, back where I'm from, you know, that's just not how we do things. And he's like, oh, where are you from?
Well, I believe key in the whole idea of establishing some sort of rapport is to be able to relate yourself. Because I don't think people like to talk to strangers. So I think it's a matter of, like, de-strangerifying ourselves, basically being willing to talk about ourselves. Because if you just ask a girl lots of questions about her, it creates this imbalance where she doesn't really feel comfortable. Yeah, it's 20 questions. She's revealing herself to a perfect stranger. So if you're not a stranger, if you sort of share as much as you ask for, I think that makes a good dynamic. And I think a lot of guys get confused with this because I'm always saying talk from the I perspective. That doesn't mean necessarily talk about the facts about your life, but talk about how things relate to you, how things feel to you, and what's going around with you exactly. Like, I really believe that guys should try to be the main character of the movie, which is their life. Because everything that you do, everything you talk about, everything that happens in your conversation, your interaction, has to have a meaning. And I think that meaning is the relevance to you. Because I think that's the thing that people care about the most in life, and I've studied this, and it took me a long time to realize this, but the thing that people care about the most in life is themselves, which is not useful at all. What's useful is the thing they care about second. The thing they care about second is people who are like them. And so if you can be a main character of a movie, just like people watch a movie, they identify with the main character because the main character has feelings and emotions. And everything that happens in the movie has a relevance to that character's feelings and emotions. I think if you can do that, you become alive. And then women make a connection to you. And I think the mistake a lot of guys make is they want the woman to become alive and they want to hear everything about her and they're really interested in her without themselves actually being an interesting character and putting themselves out there. And this goes in a circle because of how we started. We talked about what's your court and what's her court. And I said to you years ago, I said, try to put it more into your court. And what I mean by that is being able to reveal stuff about yourself, being able to talk freely about yourself and how things affect you, I think makes you a character that someone wants to relate to. So that makes them fired about relating themselves.
You have to be careful not to say too much, though. Because if you talk too much, like I know a lot of people do that, it can get boring after a while.
Well, I think that's true. And I think the dividing line, we always hear, like, you know, girls come back from dates and they're always like, oh, all he did was talk about himself, right? That's totally different from what I'm talking about, because I know that if a guy really talked in the eye perspective how things affect him and how he feels, that would only encourage her to do the same thing. And she would only remember, hey, I really talked about myself. He talked about himself. We had, like, this natural connection. So I think it's kind of like how you talk about it as well. And I always envision, like, two people standing, say, 5 feet across from each other, and each of them has, like, 10 sticks of bubble gum. And they're chewing the bubble gum, and then they start to blow bubbles. And what that bubble is like self-expression, being able to express yourself more and more until the bubbles actually touch and meet and get stuck together.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's like a real authentic connection, and that's like when it really feels real. And I'm just trying to get that. Like, if I'm on a date with a girl, I'm married now, but when I was on a date and what I try to get my students to do is really put more of themselves out there, express more and more of their uniqueness, because that's just going to get the other person to do the same thing. And then eventually you're going to have this touching where you both expression really come together, and it's really natural and unforced.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of Juggler's skills, or
you can call me Wayne too if you want.
I know, I keep wanting to call you Wayne. I keep wanting to call you Wayne, but it's more fun to call you Juggler.
Sure.
Is that you can call me Style Ming.
You can call me Chris.
Yeah, you can call me Chris Paul. So one of his skills and one of the things that I think is one of the strongest things he teaches, becoming an interesting conversationalist. And I think that's one of your strong things. What I want to ask you really,
yeah.
and I kind of always try to get at this, is where you kind of learn this stuff on your own through life. Where did you sort of learn to sort of pick up these things?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've learned things along the ways. I think I'm learning things here today with you guys. I think I've learned a lot from you, Neil, as well about interaction and conversation. I like good conversation. You know, I teach a conversation camp, which is all about it. I like communicating with other people, and not that I always do that perfectly, but to me, that's a fun experience. And I think that's the difference between a conversationalist who's a good conversationalist versus someone who's not, is that they're looking for different things. Like, I really enjoy the process. I enjoy having the conversation. To me, that is the goal. I'm not trying to use that to further anything else. I'm trying to actually just enjoy the moment. I think that's the number one goal of being good at conversation, or even being good at picking up girls or meeting people or having relationships, is really thoroughly enjoying the moment and not being too far ahead of yourself. It's like if a guy obviously just wants to have sex with somebody, right? He's not really enjoying the moment because his mind is so far ahead of himself that he can't thoroughly be there with the person. I think that's not cool, and that's the turnoff. So I think that's the number one thing. But
and did you learn this stuff? Were you always like this, or from being a street performer, or what?
I noticed, yeah, I did dodge the question, didn't I? A little bit from everybody, but being a street performer did help.
Or more, or just to take even back a step, you know, everyone has their own kind of journey, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mine really was that I was really shy in high school and college, and then I think writing for the New York Times helped me be confident in terms of people would kind of automatically respect me because the name of the New York Times brought.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the first step in confidence. Going to the community and doing all these approaches and meeting all these guys, maybe the next step. So, you know, what was sort of your journey to being who you are now?
You know, I think you and I have kind of a similar journey. I think I was very shy in high school. I lived this lonely life. Trying to make it sound worse, but I my parents were good parents, but I was really raised by the television,
right.
And so I didn't really have an interaction skill. And the great thing about that though was I didn't have any bad habits, like because my parents really didn't teach me an interaction. I didn't. Like a lot of people, they're taught something, but they're taught badly, but at least they have a habit. I didn't have any habits. So I had to sort of figure everything out for myself. So I just started from ground zero and sort of, I guess, invented myself. And a lot of that was through reading and through writing. I think both of us share love, sort of the written word. And, you know, I read a lot, and I liked writing. You know, I made my living by writing term papers for people for a while. And I think there's a certain intelligence that people who like to read and write share. And you know what I'm talking about, yeah. And the ladies are saying yes and shaking their heads if you can't hear that. And I think...
Except for Erica, who can't tell.
Luckily, you don't need that in the Marines. But so I think there's a certain intelligence that sort of... that those sort of people have. And I always tell people, like, to be a good conversationalist, one of the best things you can do is read a book on good writing. And good writing will tell you the same thing, just about the same thing I would tell somebody about being a good conversationalist. It's like, you know, keep out the adjectives and adverbs. Decide what your point of view is and stick to it. There's, like, a lot of really good lessons in there that I think go and make someone a good conversationalist as well. So a lot of it, believe it or not, was just writing and reading and just sort of being into the written word and how to effectively put that across to other people. I think that's snuck into sort of my conversation. I kind of view those things all as the same thing.
It's
say that again.
Reading and writing, reading books on writing, on good writing. It's educating yourself.
Yeah.
So I mean, of course, it's going to make you a more like well-rounded person if you retain everything that you read.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think people who are well-read are sexy to me.
Yeah, I think it introduces you to like another world. It's almost like when you're reading a book, it's like you're meeting a different person. Because it's a different person that's writing it, and they have a different voice when they're writing. You know what I mean? Like, my sister, when she talks, she sounds like a Valley Girl, like this bubbly little thing. But when she's writing, honestly, she sounds like she's, like this 40-something-year-old woman who's lived many,
wow.
many years.
Yeah.
You know, and you would never expect that. But, you know, a lot of people have different voices. So, yeah, it makes you, like, more accustomed to, like, understanding different walks of life, I think.
Yeah, I agree. It's almost something like, I don't know, reading a good writer is almost like having sex with them, in a sense. Because you have to sort of let their thoughts dominate your thoughts and sort of go with them. That's how I feel. I think it's kind of a passive thing in a sense. I feel more feminine when I'm reading, I guess. And I feel more masculine when I'm writing. I don't know what that's about, but
I'm very masculine right now.
You do what?
I'm very masculine right now. You are.
I'm very masculine?
Yes.
Why am I very masculine?
I don't I like your voice. It's like a radio voice.
Thank you. Thank you. I've worked on it for a while now. I've
Are there other books, by the way, you would recommend to the guys, like three of your favorite books, whether they're about, you know, the game or just three books to read to kind of enrich yourself as a human being?
You know, it's funny because, like, when your book, The Game, came out, I had a business manager at that time, which, you know, we've since parted ways. But he went on the Amazon. And, you know, you can recommend, like, books that go with other books on Amazon. And he went on the Amazon as me, and he put some books on there I would never read.
Right.
I've never read. And, well, it was annoying that he did this, but he was, in his defense, he was doing this because he just wanted to, like, market and all that stuff.
Yeah, but if he offended someone, put bad books under my name.
So. Right. Well, no, these are books that a lot of people consider good books. They're like Robert Greene's Power of Something or Other.
Right.
And I read some, like, I've never read any of those. I wouldn't recommend any of these books. So I got in there and I changed them to all books that I think guys could read and they would actually have something to talk about with girls. So like, Wicked, I think, is a great book. Like, if you, I don't know if any of you girls have read this book, Wicked, or it's like a Broadway, okay, So Goes the Theory, they haven't read this. What's that?
I know it's like a Broadway.
It's like a Broadway. Well, at that time, that was a really popular book for women, and I think a lot of women like that book. So it's something to talk about with women. You know, conversational fodder, I think, is really important. He's just not into, I've not read the book. I want to read that book, though.
Book
even so every now.
When I thought of that book. And it's a fun book. It's a good conversational book.
Yeah, it is. I mean,
go out with it to a cafe.
Exactly,
because
that helps to relate to women, that book.
Yeah.
Or Why Men Love
Bitches. This is kind of fun. We should do this with the girls.
Yeah.
This should be like
another good one, too. Why Men Love Bitches is kind of a new kind of leading self-help book for women, which is fun to read, too. And, you know, and I had a thought, which is reading over Why Men Love Bitches and advice to women, reading over advice to guys. I feel like the advice works in a situation where it's not 100%, you know, 100% like each other. I do feel like when you have 100% real connection, you don't have to use any of this stuff. The stuff is when you have to persuade someone a little bit more into liking you, because a lot of Why Men Love Bitches is about holding back. A lot of the game, again, is about holding back. And when it's like you're both in the same place, you don't have to hold back.
Yeah.
Because, like, Lisa always used to say when we did kind of interviews is that I got her because of the game, but I almost lost her because of the game.
That's interesting.
I remember her saying something like that.
Okay, can we come back to me now?
I
just want to finish the book recommendation.
Story.
Oh, I just want to say there's one book, and I...
Sorry to have some conversation based on what you're saying. We won't let you... shut up now.
That's true. No. That's true. I don't know if anyone out there has seen this movie called Adaptation.
Great movie.
And great movie, exactly. And there's the guy who gives screenwriting advice. Remember, what's his name? He's like a character.
Charlie Kaufman?
Well, Charlie Kaufman can't write, and so he goes to a guru that is all about screenwriting.
Right.
And I don't remember the guy's name, but excuse me at this moment. But there's an actor that plays a real person who's this guru that gives advice on screenwriting. And his famous book is called Story.
Right.
If you've ever, just go and look for Story. And it's all about screenwriting. But it's a great book on conversation and learning how to interact with people at the same time, because you can apply a lot of those techniques in your interactions with people.
Right.
So that's my number one pick. I always also like The Power of Now.
Right.
What's that?
Whenever you Madonna, Power of Now.
Madonna's favorite book was?
Yeah,
well, that's good.
I'm going to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No. I think, you know, books that I don't really like pickup books except for my own pickup book, which can be found at chrismars.com. It's counterintuitive, but or maybe I'm shooting myself in the foot here, but I really recommend a lot of people read widely and read other stuff besides. I think a lot of guys read too much pickup sort of how to get good with girls, and then, you know, you're not going to go up to a girl and talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to go up to a girl and actually make conversation with her, so find something you can actually make conversation about. I think that's my biggest recommendation. So, all right, what books do you like? I forgot everybody's name, but I want to say Jack.
Casey,
what's your favorite book?
Oh, well,
one of your favorite books. So this Extasia.
It's always changing.
Okay, I'll read that.
By Francesca Leah Block, who did it? We See That Now.
Okay, I'll have to go and read that book.
How about Jackie, what's your
favorite?
The Golden Compass by Phil Pullman.
You know, that's like a movie, isn't it, coming out?
No, it's a movie.
Yeah, I want to see that.
Yeah.
It's a, what, you know what, there's some great metaphors in the Golden Compass that I really like.
Lovely metaphors.
But I won't go into them because they take a while, but there's a couple nice metaphors. It's a very quick read.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to read that again. I read when I was 9.
Yeah, and how about you?
I like a lot of books, but Lucy
and
Julia.
Okay.
Cool. And you know, I think another thing that's helped me out is having a wide-ranging... I get a hold of Mike. Yo, so another thing that's helped me out is having, like, a wide-ranging knowledge of culture.
Mm-hmm.
Because imagine if you meet someone and, like, they know your favorite movie, they know your favorite book, they know your favorite band. You know, Erica just said, wow, it's, like, so cool that you can sort of... I read somewhere that commonalities, having things in common, actually releases... pheromones or something,
yeah,
knowing that someone has those things in common.
Well, you've got to feel that they're real things in common. I think a lot of, if you try to fake that or try to, like, go, hey, what's your favorite band? I like, what's your favorite band?
The Fray.
And then you say, what's your favorite band? She says The Fray, and you go, oh, me too. I mean,
right.
It's just not going to sound real.
What's your favorite song? And then they can't tell me.
Yeah, exactly.
I think, again, you've got to show, if you're going to say something's your favorite or you're interested in something, you've got to prove it. You've got
to
say, what do you really get out of it? If you
right.
can show your greed, in a sense, it becomes real.
It's more like, what's your favorite, right? If it's like, what's your favorite, often someone's like Phil Pullman, and what's your favorite book? You're like The Golden Compass. Like, oh, my God, like, what do you like most about it? Just
yeah.
Discussion of the Damons, you're like, oh my God, that's awesome. That's actually part
that
of the reason we
yeah,
bonded, actually.
Yeah, part of the reason why it's Neil and I did.
Because I just read it.
Went over that book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Aww.
Aww.
So on to a couple other kind of key points. I know that you have written down your note, death graveyards. Is that anything you want to discuss?
I was going to say, that was we were talking about death earlier. I was going to just throw this in if we actually got to say it. I don't know if this is any relevance to anybody out there, but...
Well, say goodbye to
okay. Well, let's just say goodbye to everybody then. Okay. Goodbye, Casey. Any last words?
You guys are great.
Thank you. Very, very, very unique last words. I appreciate that. Okay. Okay. So, and what's your name again? I'm sorry.
Erica.
Go ahead, Erica. Last words.
Advice for guys that will change their lives. No pressure.
Okay.
Confidence. Okay, I like that. Confidence. I think that's really sexy in women as well.
Whenever things don't go right and then go exactly how you expect them to, don't blame yourself so much and don't overanalyze everything.
I agree completely.
Don't blame her like that one night at a house. Remember?
We'll get back to that. That's a good thought, though.
When a certain person was over and saying that you don't understand women.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and don't
lose your cool when things don't go right.
And don't lose your cool, that's right.
Crazy owner. That's very
I think having a sense of humor and just like, being able to laugh at yourself, I think is huge. Hugely important. And I think that's really attractive in women too. So I think it goes both ways. Okay, Jack.
I would like to say for you guys to all pursue the woman that you want and not to take everything too seriously and to have fun doing everything that you guys do. And don't get depressed about it and don't get sad about anything. You guys are probably going to try and fail, like I try and fail, but you'll get somewhere. You won't.
Okay, I have one more question for the girls. If you were going to pick up the man of your dreams, how would you do it? In one word, what would you use?
Personality.
Personality, what would you? Okay, and you got it. Okay, we'll come back to Casey.
No idea.
Okay. Well,
that was so cool that you guys don't have to think about this.
That's your assignment for this week. We'll get back with you next week and see what your answers are.
Being a guy, man. I have a question that's completely obnoxious and off the topic, and I'm just curious because I've never asked anyone this, but I was having a discussion with some friends the other day. Mm-hmm. Have you guys ever faked an orgasm?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Have you?
Yeah.
Have
no.
You? No. Because it's interesting.
I have.
That's interesting because I was like, yeah. No, I find that interesting because why did you fake it?
Because I knew that he wouldn't be able to stop unless I faked it because that's what gets him off.
Right.
And
you know what
I mean? Right.
So in other
words, no way. You're cheating me. I know.
So in other words, they put so much pressure, you have an orgasm, and you're like,
yeah, exactly.
I guess I think I did fake one once, and that was the reason.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
It was chafing.
That's funny.
Yeah. It's funny. It's interesting. I don't know. Anyway, on that note.
I don't know. Well, thanks for coming by, girls. It was nice meeting you.
Yeah.
It was nice meeting you. Because
someone was saying, like, if you've been with girls at some point, someone's taken orgasm. I'm like, I don't think anyone ever has, but now that...
You think about it.
Now that I think about it, maybe.
Everybody has to eventually. Sometimes it's too much.
Yeah. What's that?
Nothing. And, like, with Eric, for example, he was there for so long, and I have a really small body.
Huh?
I have a really small body, so it, like, hurts me. You know what I mean? After a while, it starts to hurt. And he can go for hours, like, forever, unless I have, like...
That's what Viagra will do to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Can't you just say, well, wouldn't it be better just to be like, Let's take a little break. It's unhurt.
You don't want to.
Uh-huh.
You were afraid of disappointing him. Why do you give a fuck about
disappointing him? The more pressure, I mean, I think another point, too, is that no guy can make a girl have an orgasm. You have to allow her to have an orgasm.
Exactly.
The more they try to make you, the less you're going to actually have one, because you can't get out of your head enough to actually have one.
Yeah.
That's a whole Zen thing.
It is a Zen thing. That's what
I think what's sexy is I don't think we can really get somebody else off. I think we can only get ourselves off.
So on that note, so let's say goodbye, and then we're going to talk to each other. So,
bye, bye.
Bye. Thank you guys for coming by.
You
too. I hope that was interesting
for
someone. I wish you guys could stick around to hear the guys' questions.
Thanks for taking part.
I know. I had so much fun. I was
so
happy
to
be
here.
Bye.
So, thanks, Jackie. I appreciate it. Same here. And the girls are all leaving, and hugs and kisses all around, and very, very nice to see them go. Bye, Casey. So, yeah, I guess it's just Wayne here. Otherwise known as Juggler. So what was that? Oh, yeah, we're talking about death. Graveyards. I just threw this in, but I think graveyards have always inspired me. And I think they're a very inspiring place, because I think that most of us, and I had this discussion with my friend Evan today, this morning, about getting things done. You know, we all have goals. Maybe your goals is to become a ladies' man or meet the girl of your dreams, or who knows what your goal is, to make $1 million. I think, like, part of the motivation for me has always been the opposite of being successful, the opposite of achieving my goals, the opposite of taking action. That's death. And it's always inspired me to walk through graveyards. And I always look at the gravestones, like reading the dates and the names. And it's always like, hey, these people lived for 50 years or 80 years, and now they're dead. And their hopes, their dreams, all that stuff is gone. And I really find that inspiring. And I think anyone can really profit, really, by looking at, just really understanding, really absorbing the fact that, you know what, all you have is today. And I really believe that you've got to actually take action. You've got to do things today. Because eventually, you'll be dead and gone. And that's it. And I think the finality of death, of graveyards, has always really inspired me to live to the most of my abilities and take chances and take risks. And I think it's the same thing. Like, sometimes you're standing across from the most gorgeous girl you've ever seen. I mean, I know I've stood across from the most gorgeous girl I've ever seen and been nervous. And yet, there's something to me that I just have to take action because I know that the opposite of that is that my life will eventually end, and the only regrets I'll have is the things I didn't do. And
you're on a time constraint.
I am on a big time constraint, in a sense. And so I've always found graveyards, believe it or not, very, very inspiring.
Yeah, my philosophy is I never say later to things. I always say now. If I ever ask someone, do you want to go on a trip, you want to do something, they're like, well,
yeah,
I'll think about it, or maybe it's just a no to me. Either you're up for life or you're not up for life. Don't put shit off, because you put off that trip that you're going, you know, to Australia, say, or where you want to go,
yeah,
and you say, I'm going to do that next year, well, that's just one more year you're not going to be traveling. And if you get that trip out of the way, and you get to take the next trip. Like, my problem in life is that I take on too much. I don't say no to things, because I just know I live once, and I literally feel, speaking of graveyards, that, like, they're, like, kind of fucking flaming dogs from hell chasing me. And I got to run and do all the shit before they catch me. And
yeah,
when they catch me, that's like death.
You do a lot of things.
Yeah.
I'm always amazed. This is kind of my interview of you now, but you do so many things, and I think you have a lot of things in the fire at once, and I've always admired your ability to do many, many things and sort of somehow organize that in your life. I've always been a guy who can do maybe a couple of things at a time, and then I feel overwhelmed, I've always admired that about you. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the main problem is I learned all these amazing social skills, and now, but I get myself so busy that sometimes I don't have enough social time in my life. But I guess I'm doing fine since, obviously.
Yeah. What do you think is the biggest problem that guys? I don't want to just dwell on problems, but what is the biggest problem that you feel that guys have in sort of the process of making themselves better with women?
Yeah, I think the biggest problem guys have is they project their own fears onto women. And a small example is, I recently did a seminar, and I had Jackie come up. It was just like a week or two ago. And she came up to the room, and I had guys from calibration by telling me everything they could guess about Jackie. And they said she was a gold digger. They said she probably liked rich guys, you know, probably had a lot of attitude. And he kind of, and Jackie, as we just saw, because you didn't see her, you just talk to her. She's a very sweet, really kind, good-hearted person.
Yeah.
But what they saw and said was their own fears. Like, here's a beautiful woman, well-made up, well-dressed, looking like this. And instead of seeing her who she was,
mm-hmm.
they just project their own fears onto her.
Yeah.
Saying, when they're saying she's a gold digger and she probably likes rich guys, what they're really saying is, I'm not good enough for her.
Right.
So I think the biggest problem that guys have is they project their own fears onto women rather than seeing as they are.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's straight right on. You know, one of the things I've, and I don't know how you, we've never really talked about this, but, you know, I guys are always, in my experience, a lot of guys are looking for solutions to overcome their fear. They're looking for a way to mentally overcome their fear. You know, NLP stuff, or to try and hypnotize themselves. And I got to tell you, I've met a lot of guys who do really dangerous things these days. In the last few years teaching this stuff, some guys who do, you know, special forces guys get in firefights, and none of them seem to do the NLP, try to psych yourself out and try to make the danger seem like it's something nice and fuzzy. Most of these guys have just acquired the habit of going towards their fear, figuring out what they fear, and just going doing it anyway, and it's sort of a life habit. And I've always tell guys, like, that's the best way to really confront your fear, is to actually embrace it and say, good, I have a fear. That means I need to confront it and sort of make almost like look for a fear-confronting exercise, something you fear and you can go and do anyway, and make that a habit, and look for that almost on a daily basis. For instance, I don't live in L.A. anymore, but I used to up until 3 weeks ago. I may move back, but one of my fear-approaching exercises here was I would ride my Vespa in Los Angeles traffic, which, for anybody who's driven here, it's scary enough driving a car, but driving a Vespa is really is dangerous and completely crazy. But for me, I needed to do that every day because I needed to have something I feared, and I would just go and do it anyway. And I find, like, being able to acquire the habit of confronting fear and going towards what I fear is the best thing for guys to learn about approaching women, because you're always going to be somewhat fearful, and you just got to go do it anyway. What are your thoughts on that?
One of the most inspirational quotes that I love and kind of use a lot is Wayne Gretzky, the hockey player. Do you know this quote?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's
like
great.
Yeah.
We miss 100% of the shots we don't take. In other words, you know, if you don't approach someone, there's a 100% chance that nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
Versus if you approach them, even if it's a 1% chance, that's a better chance.
Yeah. Wayne Gretzky also said that he could see the puck going into the goal ahead of time.
So, make of that what you will. Exactly.
He had an unfair advantage.
Yeah, exactly. So a couple of the things, and we'll open up for questions. Let me see. It's it's a little past question time. So just a couple other questions about simply, you know, some of your key sort of thoughts and ideas, which is, obviously we're talking about approach. A lot of people, I think the hardest part for guys is the approach and kind of what I call the hook point when someone's interested in you.
Sure.
And then, so what are your sort of suggestions for the approach?
As far as what?
As far as you're out, let's just say in the daytime.
Mm-hmm.
You're out in the daytime, you're at a shopping mall.
Yeah.
And you see a couple girls you want to approach who are just walking with some bags.
Yeah, I think I'm going to give two conflicting ideas here. Right?
That'll be very useful.
That'll be very useful. Just confuse people. But I think that I could tell a guy an approach that I think, given in any situation, I think would have more of a likelihood to succeed. However, I think that that's bad. It's that if I try to tell a guy, okay, this is the best thing you can do that's going to definitely work,
right,
that's the thing he shouldn't do. Because if he's looking for something that's absolutely going to work, I think he's avoiding the issue. And then the issue is again confronting your fear, is doing it anyway. And there's a lot of power in doing something badly, and being okay with that. I think if we're looking for perfection, most likely we're not going to do anything in the long run. And so I try to tell guys, you know what, I could tell you what I would recommend, and I'm going to tell you that in a minute. But I think the bigger lesson is, it doesn't have to be perfect. Just go do it anyway, because women don't even want perfection, right? I realized that pretty soon after I started teaching this stuff way back in the day, is when I would be suave and perfect and say the right thing, women would always get really suspicious, like, what's going on there? He's a sort of pickup artist. And I learned that I had to sort of build in flaws. And I had to sort of act normal and humble.
You got to pretend to be flawed.
Well, no, the thing is, it wasn't that hard. It's very easy to be. Yeah, I have a lot of flaws. So just basically letting some of those flaws out there. So I think, you know, the whole thing is, you don't want to be perfect. And there's a lot of charm in being imperfect, but being okay with that. And I think that's what real confidence is. Real confidence is not being great at something. Real confidence is being okay with exactly who you are, flaws and all.
Yeah,
and I think that's
true.
I think
point.
And. And I think that a lot of, I think most women and even most people, most guys, we find what's sexy about another person is real confidence, is the person really being okay with who they are, flaws or not. And not being perfect at approach is perfectly fine. And it's, the thing is, it's not what you say that really matters. It's not even what she says that matters. It's what you say to what she says that really matters. It's how you handle her reaction. That's the key. And this goes back to calibration as well. And calibration to me is simply listening. Listening with your eyes, listening ears, seeing the subcommunication, seeing and feeling what's really going on. And when a woman responds to you, being able to really not be in your head thinking about what you're going to say next, but really take that in, process it, and then respond to her response that's calibrated, that makes sense in the moment. And that can be with anything. I mean, sometimes having a bad reaction isn't a bad thing if you can handle the reaction. I think you've talked about this before. I've heard you talk about it, is that if you can handle bad reactions, there's no stopping you. You're an unstoppable force. And if you can do that well, you can even try to create bad reactions, which is actually more fun than having a good reaction in the beginning. Sometimes, believe it or not, having a good reaction in the beginning will actually harm your success later on, but having a bad reaction at the beginning can actually be good for your success later on. You know, oftentimes we hate the people we're attracted to initially. So chew on that.
Yeah.
But I think now I'm going to tell you the best approach I feel like during the day, the approach that I think is most natural is what I call a focus opener, which is basically seeing what the other person is focused on, starting there. Not seeing the things around them necessarily, although that might be part of their focus, but feeling like, what are they thinking about at that moment and starting at that place. Now, if you can't really find something she's thinking about, then just presume something about her, something positive, and start there. That's what I find the best thing. Like, for instance, if you're in an art gallery, easy place to approach women. They're looking at the piece of art. That's where you approach them. You say, what do you think? Easy opener. Guys spend all the time going, they spend all this time and money and angst going to nightclubs. You can pick up the hottest girls going to a good art gallery, as you and I did in San Francisco years ago. Just show up. There's hot girls. They're usually by themselves, sometimes in twos, so bring a wingman. And they're really usually hot girls who are artistic. They're open-minded. And you know what? It's an easy opener. They're looking at a PCR. You say, what do you think? And she says, I think this. And then you say, well, I think this.
Right.
And then you're off and running.
That was like a semi-well-known actress. I don't know if I mentioned that in the book.
Yeah, you did. Well, you mentioned it to me. I don't know if you put it in the book, but yeah. She was like a childhood actress or something.
Yeah.
She's cute, though.
It's funny, too. I mean, Ross Jeffries called it pacing the reality.
Yeah.
But I was just thinking, as you're talking, what if you just completely pace the reality? You're probably, like, enjoying that pain right now, and now this guy's coming up and talking to you, and he's interrupting you, and you're thinking, why is this guy interrupting? And then just keep going for, like, 15 minutes.
Yeah. Well, I do think, to me, I think that would work for some people, but to me, that violates the idea that, like, I'm always trying to get people talking in their own perspective.
Right.
It's just like a character in a book. I don't really want to shift around perspective, and I think that guys make a mistake when they try to talk in somebody else's perspective, which is a very Ross Jeffers NLP thing to do, is to talk sort of for somebody. You must feel this or you must feel that, or try to put words in their mouth. And I think that's never attractive. I think the best thing we could do is express ourselves and have the other person relate to us rather than us try to relate to the other person so much.
You know what's interesting on that subject is I went out last night with a rock star friend of mine who broke up with his girlfriend that's pretty shattered. And he's going to therapist, and it's the old therapy idea, but I didn't know this. Instead of saying, like, I'm upset or I'm depressed or I'm unhappy, they always say, I feel depressed or I feel upset and I feel. And I always see people do this in movies. They never understood why. But obviously, they say, I am depressed. That's your identity versus saying, I feel depressed. That's a feeling you can control. Well, why do you feel? What's making you feel depressed and what's that feeling?
Yeah, that's interesting.
That was a nice little subtlety.
StyleLife.com presents StyleLife Academy.
Bits is exclusive.
StyleLife.com presents StyleLife Academy.
Well, I think there's like three different things people can talk about. They can talk about their own perspective, somebody else's perspective, or reality, whatever that is. The middle thing.
Right.
I think a person should spend much more time talking about their own reality, or their own perspective more than anything else.
Can you give me an example of, like, the approach in a mall or an art gallery or...
Well, like the art gallery, art gallery, for instance, right? I think it's a mistake, someone's beeping here, but I think it's a mistake to to just be into what she is thinking or what she's doing. Like, the mistake a guy would come up is he might would say, like, hey, what do you think? And she would say, well, I think the artist was on crack, right? And the guy would say, oh, why do you think that? Right there he's made a mistake because it's too much about her.
Right.
Instead of sort of telling her why he's interested in what he's interested in, and if he could talk relate from his own perspective, then everything makes sense, why he's talking about it. She gets to know him a little
bit. So what would he say?
So he would say, she would say, I think he was on crack, and he would either choose to relate to what she just said or he'd go back and answer his own question from himself. So I would say, yeah, I've often thought about becoming an artist. And
or a crack addict.
Or a crack addict, right?
So now I realize I can do both.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, I would tell this to her. I'd say, you know, when I was a kid, so many people said, Wayne, you're artistic. And I used to really think that maybe I had a career in art until as I got older, I realized they weren't saying artistic. They were saying autistic. Right? And
right.
She would laugh, and I'd say, hey, I like your smile. What's
right.
your name? So that would justify my escalation
right.
at that point. So it's just a matter of relating myself as much as I'm asking her to relate herself.
Right.
Right. And so, like, I'll give you another, for instance. Like, I do not like the question. So, like, if I was to find out you live in Los Angeles, if I was to say, so what do you like about Los Angeles? I think that's a horrible question.
Right.
Right? What do you enjoy about Los Angeles? Already I'm trying to steer your response.
Right.
And as soon as I try to steer your response, you pick up that, and I'm being needy because I'm needing a specific response. So that's the definition of neediness. I don't want to say that. Instead, I want to say, so what's it like living in Los Angeles, or what's it like for you? It's like I want to leave it as open-ended as possible. I don't want to put words in your mouth. I don't want to talk in your perspective. I want my perspective to be very clear, and I want to encourage you to talk clearly in your perspective. And when we try to, like, well, I always call it, like, I statements, you should make I statements and you questions, right? And if you confuse those two and start making I questions and you statements, it's all backwards, and it messes the guy up, and it messes the interaction up because it comes across as needy. So basically, your questions have to be as open-ended and as valueless as possible, neutral in a sense. You've got to leave it open for the person to say, like, you know, it was stupid, or I don't like living in Los Angeles, or the painting is dumb, right? Or the painting is beautiful. Whatever they want to respond. If you try to steer them a certain way, they pick up on that and feel like, oh, he's trying to get something specific
right.
from
you
me.
You feel being
needs.
Sucked dry when someone's trying to do that to you.
Right, exactly. And you know, like, yeah, leading questions, like, some waiters are particularly bad at this. They'll say, like, they'll come by and say, so that lasagna is pretty good, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like, hey, let me respond. Let me tell you how it is. You know,
right.
you're already trying to tell me how that it's good.
Right.
You don't even want to hear what I have to say. So if we don't really want to hear what the other person has to say, that means we're afraid of what we're going to hear, and that's not cool, and that doesn't show any value on our side. We show so much more value when we show that we're open to whatever the other person wants to respond. And conversely, we respond strictly in our perspective and tell the other person what we think. If you keep those two perspectives separate, then you sort of naturally blow up your bubbles, as I talked about earlier, and have a real connection instead of one that's forced.
Cool.
I don't know if that answers your question. It just confuses you more.
No, I think it does. I think those are good thoughts on opening stuff and another way to sort of look at it.
Yeah.
You know, I've been an advocate of can openers for the simple reason that you don't have to think about them. But that said, that once you get good at it, you understand the social dynamics
yeah.
and how things work, you can go ahead and just open with whatever.
Well, you know,
and when I got good at openers, I would play games with my friends. We'd go out. We play this game and say,
mm-hmm.
just give me anything to talk about. I'm going to go
right.
open a conversation on that
well, yeah,
topic.
We did that.
It's a fun
a
way to do
ago,
it.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's fun.
The stick-em-up opener.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a crazy night. Stick-em-up.
Yeah.
That's so fun.
I know.
I'm not against can openers necessarily.
Right.
I'm not against, like, okay, saying the same thing, because I agree completely with you. I think I don't want people to go have to think too much, because
right.
I think I think way too much. It's like in the army. They don't say, okay, your captain doesn't say, okay, soldiers, see that hill over there? I want you to charge over it. The enemy's over there. Go over there and then figure it out.
right.
Instead, they train somebody so they respond out of habit. They know once they go there, they hear bombs, they get down, they pick up the gun, whatever. I've never
right.
been in an army, but I think it's something like that, like training habits. So I think, like, having some can openers is fine. I like to have simple openers. I always say, like, simple. Most guys should concentrate on saying something simple, in my opinion, and saying it slower.
Right.
So basically taking up the same amount of time that you would normally take for a big opener to make it real, real simple.
Oh.
Hey, I decide, like, one of the things is I like when you come up, I think you should make an I statement and a you question. So I'll be like, hey, I decided to approach you because you guys look interesting. I want to come meet some interesting people because, you know, I've been meeting a lot of stupid people lately, although sometimes I'm myself stupid. So anyway, so what are you doing tonight? tell me your life story in five words or less, whatever. So basically turning to one person, asking them a big open-ended question. But being able to relate ourselves, doing both those things, being able to relate ourselves, talk clearly in our own perspective, and then ask the other person to talk in their own perspective. But keep it really, really simple. It doesn't have to be complex because you don't want to like think too much about it. Your opener should be simple and take up more time, not like I'm doing now because I'm rushing, trying to get everything in because we have a limited amount of time. But I think going slower and simpler is what most guys need to do. And if it's just a simple opener like, hey, how are you, which I think is a great opener, works every time, that's good. Trying to keep it really simple.
I guess you're saying, hey, I'm fine, thanks, how are you, would be better in your IU.
Well, maybe. I don't know if I'd say that. We've got to get the syntax right. But, hey, I'm having a really good day. How about you? So what have you done today? Probably something like that would work well. But I think if you consistently talk in the I perspective and ask you questions, open-ended you questions without steering somebody's response, I think you become a charismatic person. And I think ultimately you also become a person who is more focused on, or I wouldn't say more focused, but able to really listen and be in the moment and not think, like, what do I say next? Because it'll just come naturally.
Yeah, one thing, and operators, you can get ready. We're about to open this up for questions. So the last thought before we do is that one thing that you got a lot of you guys hear all these hear the conference calls and got different people on. One thing that very much sets me off, some people, not you, is a lot of people tell guys not to do things. And I hate when people say not to do things that actually work because it doesn't go in with their philosophy.
Yeah.
Certain things work for different people. That's why I try to have different people on the calls. And, you know, maybe, you really have to try everything and see what works for you. Don't think what'll work.
Yeah.
Go out and do it and see what works. But it very much upsets me, guys who are on some of the other calls. Anyone saying don't do this and it confuses you, fucking do it all. Do what Wayne says. Do what I says. Do what the last person says. Do what your mother says. Do what you read somewhere else. And go try them all in a consistent way and see what works the best for you. I hate when people say don't do something that works because it doesn't fit in with their philosophy or system or their method.
Can I say something to that, Neil?
Yeah.
Whenever I do my seminars, I always start it off by saying, I'm going to tell you my way of doing things. But if I ever tell you that you never do something, there's a big asterisk here that you should know. Whenever I say that, I'm full of shit. Because I'm going to tell you that everything works sometime in some place. And if anybody says that something doesn't work, it works for somebody.
Right.
So just keep that in mind. So what I try to do is I just try to give people my method, my structure, and say just learn one structure.
Right.
And then once you learn to deviate from it. You know, there's my friend Evan is also here today, started listening in. He's a great artist, a great painter, and he went to art school. And we had a long discussion about this, like what does it take to be a great artist? And a lot of great artists will learn the rules. They'll learn a certain method and a certain way of doing stuff. But the idea is that you just understand why things happen the way they do. But once you do that, once you understand the system, whatever it is, deviate from it. Take some risk. Take some chance. Do something completely different. And I think that's a rule to live by. I think a lot of guys have to do that. But I do think, and maybe this differs from you, Neil, but I do think a lot of guys make the mistake when they try to mix a lot of different systems and ways. I would rather a guy learn completely one way of doing it, one sort of style, if you have to say, learn that completely before going on, because I think a lot of guys try to mix so many things at once, and they just get confused. Because I know, like, you know, mystery stuff is not going to really mix with mine. I know that, you know, whoever's stuff is not going to mix with his. I think learning one style, really understanding it, that's the key, and then move on to something else, move on to changing it to your way, I think is key. I think a lot of guys confuse stuff when they try to do a lot of different stuff at the same time. That's just my thoughts.
I don't know. I'm trying to think if that's the way I learned or not, because I feel like I took it a lot kind of one at a time. Like first I read a lot of Russ Jeffries stuff. I go out and try that. Then I took Mysteries kind of workshop, and then I kind of looked into people's things, and we got to try and keep the pieces of each that sort of worked for me. But maybe I did it one at a time.
Well, I think it was less confusing. I think you did a lot of stuff one at a time.
Right.
And I think it was less confusing then because you have so many, you know, guys are always like, ask me now, like, there's whatever the community is, you've got so many sort of people trying to make money or people putting their ideas across. You've got so many conflicting ideas and people saying, oh, God.
Yeah, you know, the problem,
it's just the
problem with the business thing now, because really back then there wasn't so much of it.
No.
There was Ross Jeffries was doing seminars, and that was about it. And then eventually David D. Then eventually, you know, Ross Jeffries was just about the only business in town.
Mm-hmm.
And so back then, problem with the business thing is people try to say to distinguish their business by saying how they're different from everyone else. You just get a fucking 1,000 people doing the same thing but calling it differently, and it does get confusing. So So, that, I mean, I think the real answer is, you know, just choose something, go with it, see what it works, go into the next thing,
yeah.
see what works. I don't know. I mean,
well,
I think my problem is this.
Yeah.
The problem why I still don't exactly agree with what you're saying is I don't believe in taking a philosophical approach to something that's practical. You know what I mean? Like
I agree with that. And I think I'm trying to be practical. I'm saying in my experience, I think the most practical way is to learn a system and understand it before you try, because you'll never understand it if you're just accumulating
all the information.
That's what a lot of people
right.
do.
But maybe, you know, my whole philosophy is you take it piece by piece in your game. So I don't think in terms of,
totally agree, yeah.
you know, go juggler style, go style, go mystery style, go Ross Jeffrey style. I sort of think, where am I at now? I need to learn how to approach.
Yeah.
So let me find out how to approach. I'll look in, you know, I'll use some of jugglers' ideas about situational. I'll look into some of, you know, Neil's opinion openers. I'll look into some of these openers. I'll go out and try them.
Yeah.
And now once I have opening down, then I think, what's the next piece? Continue the conversation. And we look into this sort of report literature on that. And I really believe that I learned by taking it one piece at a time versus, say, taking your whole philosophy or my whole philosophy from beginning to end when you're not even there. So I kind of think of, and that's how I design the style life thing, is sort of small chunk it one at a time, because you don't need to know how to give a girl the stacking orgasms technique when you still are trying to figure out how to set up a date.
Yeah, well, no, I agree with that. But I do think that, like, if my stuff, like anybody's stuff, builds upon itself. A guy's always like, hey, you know, I did you SOI? And he's like, well, before I SOI'd, I did this routine or something. I'm like, that's not going to work because you didn't build up in the way that I would build it up. So you're taking a piece of my stuff and trying to build off of something that doesn't really go with it. So
For
me, yeah.
You know, because everyone, I just think that your way, a lot of people's way works for them because of their specific personality.
I totally agree. But I think that, you know, if your personality is at all like mine, if you want to be sort of a little more free-flowing, I would say try to take the first part of whatever I'm offering and then go to the next part, and try to build off until you've got sort of an understanding of the whole system and then go learn something else. You know, I always think, like, Bruce Lee, a lot of people make a thing, the Jeet Kune Do, which
right.
is Bruce Lee's martial arts, which is very much open to a lot of different ideas and styles. Like, you know, he started with Wing Chun. He really understood one system completely
right.
before incorporating other stuff. So what I'm saying is, if you really understand one system, one set of ideas completely all the way through, no matter how long that takes, I think that you're better off than trying to, on the fly, throwing a lot of different stuff in.
Right.
That's my opinion, because I just don't want to see a lot of guys confused. And like you say, I want it to be practical
right.
and useful for the guys. And I don't want to see them just confused. And I think a lot of people just get confused.
Right.
These days.
I think we agree on the end goal, and then we'll disagree on the way to get to that end goal, because we don't want guys confused. We think there's too much information. A lot of it contradicts. But again, I sort of think that I just know from my own path and my own journey from learning this stuff, I just stuck to one person and just did their thing, I wouldn't have had the sort of maneuverability and well-rounded knowledge and been able to develop my own things if I hadn't sort of put it in this bouillabaisse soup of everything that was there. But then again, I knew information would conflict. I didn't care whether my gurus got laid or not. I just thought, can I learn something from them? And I thought, what do I need right now to get to the next level? And then I actively consume what I needed. I posted the forums and figured out, what do I need to get to the next level wherever I can fucking get it? So the point is, we'll agree to disagree on how to.
Well, that's one thing I've always admired about you, is you've been open to learn from everyone you meet, and you didn't come into this with an ego and different times then, but you didn't come into this like, okay, I've got to show my mettle, or I've got something
right.
to prove. You came into it with something to learn. I think that's a really good attitude for a lot of guys to have, for sure.
Cool. And let's open up to some questions, because we've been blabbing for too long, and the guys are either ears are hurting.
Conversationally masturbating.
Yeah, exactly. Hello? Oh, wait, it's been hung up the whole time. No, just kidding. Operator, do you want to open it up with some questions?
Yes, at this time, if you do have a question, please press the number 1 on your touch-tone phone now. Be sure to press the number 1 only once. If you press it more than once, it will remove you from the question queue. And give me one moment while I get your first question, gentlemen. Okay, our first question today comes from Vodka. Your line is open.
Hey, Vodka, what's happening, man?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, Vodka, you made me thirsty for some reason.
So, thanks. My question is about transitioning out of the opener. I can open situationally or with a canned opener, but then when the opener kind of plays out, I don't know where to go from there.
Very good question. I think that happens to a lot of guys. A lot of guys are – I remember one guy specifically wrote me. He said, look, Wayne, I met this girl – I was at the farmer's market, and we started talking all Mexican Mexican dishes because my mom's Mexican. We having this good interaction, and then I didn't know where to take it. So how do I transition to talking about movies or something else? And I told him, you know what, you don't transition to talking about movies. That'd be really stupid. You don't want to transition to other material necessarily. I think you want to escalate the interaction. So I, instead of thinking about it as transitioning, which I think is a weaker way of looking at, I would really recommend looking at it as escalation. There's a certain escalation windows that open up where a girl says, wow, I'm really enjoying this. I hope this goes someplace. And at that time, if you go to more material or you keep it on the same level, I think that you lose the moment and that window closes. So I think in most interactions, there's escalation windows. Like I always think of any interaction, I think, goes through three different vibes. It goes through platonic, personal, and sexual. And if you start platonic, I think there's a certain point you've got to make it sexual or you got to make it personal. And then once you're personal, there's a certain point you've got to make it sexual. So I would say if within doubt, go to the next level. Show some interest and take it to the next level. And I think you do that by giving them the why and the what. You tell them why you're interested in going to the next level, and you describe exactly what that's like. So, for instance, if I meet a girl, and so let's say I meet her during the day, and I want to sit down and have coffee with her, that's my next escalation. That's a physical escalation, but it's a logistical escalation, I should say. I have to have a reason why I want to do that, something specific about her that I like, that I get out of it, something that my greedy motivation, I've got to show that. So I say, hey, you make me laugh. Let's say she makes me laugh. I say, hey, you actually make me laugh. It's a long time since I met a girl who made me laugh. So I don't know what you've got going on for the next 10 minutes, but I'd like to sit down for 5 minutes and have a cup of coffee with you. Like, that gives her the why, specifically why you want to do what you want to do, and tells her what specifically you want to do. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And if all else fails, you can always offer her vodka.
one of my things also that I think is a common misconception in the understanding of this stuff is that, to me, it's not, and it's, you know, it's not blocks. They're not blocks of discrete items that you do when you're running games. So you don't do a discrete over, that's a block, that block ends. Then you discrete, say, DHV, and that block ends. And you know, it's not, or, you know, A1, A2, A3, these things aren't discrete blocks. To me, to make things transition naturally is I weave them together. So maybe during my opener, you know, while I'm doing my opener, I'm weaving in the next pieces of the conversation. I'm saying, well, you know, I'm saying, well, that's my brother who, but, you know, he's somewhere else, but that's a long story. Or I love that bag. You have to tell me where you got that later. Or, you know, someone's walking past, I'm like, see that guy over there? I got a funny story about him. But in the meantime, here's what I'm trying to say. Or I'm sort of like starting conversations, and maybe I'll stop my opener and talk about something else as it's ongoing, so that everything's sort of like weaved together like a little basket, so there's no sort of unnatural awkward pause while you have to get to the next place. Because as soon as that awkward pause happens before our attraction's been built, then that's their excuse to leave.
Also, I just want to say that also, Vodka, I think a lot of guys make the mistake of trying to be interesting, and instead of understanding that escalation itself is interesting. What's the most interesting thing is changing the nature of the relationship between you and her. And if you're able to do that, that's exciting and interesting for a woman. So instead of trying to talk about interesting things, escalate, because that in itself is interesting. That's a ride. That's an adventure. And once you're going on an adventure, everything's possible for you.
It's interesting because I think we have, and again, I think both things work, and we have slightly different philosophies, I think, which is mine is I don't want there to come to yes-no decision points. I just sort of want them swept up there not knowing how they got
right,
there,
well,
which is maybe a writer. I'm always, you know, transition thing
right.
Versus sort of, you know, getting to these points where it's sort of like this tacit agreement of escalation.
I think you prime the pump, you get to the point where she's the most interested, and then you ask for a commitment. And I think you do that throughout. I think that's how it's done. But
I think it comes down to person. Even let's say I'm dating a girl.
Yeah.
There's never a point where I say, will you be my girlfriend?
Well, I don't either. That's not, if you really listen to how I frame the escalation, it never comes like that. I never make it a question or a demand. I make it a statement of preference.
Right. So
I say, hey, I really like you because of this.
Right.
Because you made me laugh. You're sexy. I find you really sexy,
right.
Attractive because I like creative girls. Because I want to be a creative person. I don't know, right?
Right.
So it goes back to showing why I'm interested. And then I say, I would like to see you again. So I simply state my preference. I don't make it a question. It's not a question.
Right.
It's not a demand. A lot of guys make the mistake of going either way.
Right.
It's simply a statement of preference, and then I shut up.
Right. So
and see what happens.
Right, and I think that, yeah, that completely makes sense. And again, I really think that works, and I like the way you do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm maybe in some degree, you know, my way perhaps is more, it's I don't know what it is, but my way, you know, I really just want to make sure that there's no problem anywhere along the way. So in other words, when we get to the point where we're leaving,
yeah,
we already sort of know what we're doing, the plans that are already there.
Totally agree. Like,
yeah.
I agree with that. I think making, like, that's the what part of escalation,
right,
is making it really clear. If you can draw a picture in her mind of what that will be like,
right,
then she's much more likely to do it because it's not scary and it's much more interesting to her. And I think a lot of guys, when they leave it ambivalent, they say, hey, we should hang out again. It's
right,
like, what is that? What,
yeah,
is the hanging out again?
And
I don't,
why should I hang out again with you? And what are we going to do? I got a busy life, man.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think also, like, you got to give her the why and what you say, why you want to hang out with her again,
right,
because that shows your value. You know, you don't give away value by showing interest in people. You give away your value by showing interest for no apparent reason or for a generic reason.
That's a great point. Great point.
If you can find what is special and unique about a person, or at least make them think that, and how that affects you, why that is important to you, then people will believe that escalation, that interest is justified. They'll feel like they deserve it. They've worked for it. And so the escalation is much more likely to go through. And then tell them, like Neil says there, very specifically what it will be like, what you have in mind, that what has to be a picture in their mind. And the stronger you can make the picture, the better. But again, Vak, I think don't look for a material, in my opinion, don't look for a material solution. Don't look for more stuff to say, but rather escalate. And if you can do that well, you'll be surprised how far that can take you.
Cool. Thanks, Vaka.
Thank you.
Next, we have Zyphron. Your line is open.
Sci, what?
Zyphron.
Cyclops?
Chris.
Cyclops.
Anyway. What?
Is your name Cyclops, like a Cyclops?
No, Z.
Zyclops.
It's a Z. Z-Y-P-H-R-O-N.
What does that mean?
Oh, Zyphron.
Yeah.
What does it mean?
It's actually just something that I came up with when I was a kid, like middle school somewhere.
Yeah.
And it was used for, like, gaming and stuff like that, and it's now become what I use for just about everything.
Yeah, that's interesting. I like that.
Yeah.
That's how I came up with Juggler.
Didn't you used to do street performing, though?
Yes, I was a juggler. Well, I wanted to be a juggler in middle school, obviously. I don't know, what did you want to be when you're... When people ask you, what did you want to be when you're a kid? Somebody asked me that the other day.
Uh-huh.
All I could remember was, I wanted to be king of my own island.
Awesome. That can be done.
Okay, so on with the question.
I actually had a question about questions, specifically regarding what you've taught before. At one point in some of your stuff, you talked about questions being almost this currency that you used up with people, and that you shouldn't ask too many questions, and you should have statements. And
sorry, I can't answer this question because it is a question.
rephrase it as a statement. Now, for fun, okay, rephrase the question as a statement.
This is like Jeopardy.
Wait.
No, it's okay.
No,
it'll
be a fun exercise. Can I make someone do it? Great, just rephrase it for fun. I just want to see what happens. Rephrase the question as a statement.
I'm going to want to have sex with him. That's what's going to happen. Oh, my God. Go ahead.
We're waiting.
So, yeah, I think, you know, I was... And then you also have other stuff about how, you know, you should ask really deep, open-ended questions, and then just, you know, freeze body language and all that kind of stuff. I've loved reading a lot of your stuff because it's a little more conversational and natural and normal than a lot of the other stuff out there. But I guess my question to you then is...
Your statement to us.
What's your... My question about questions is, what is your feeling now on questions?
Okay. That is a good question itself. I still believe the same thing. I think questions are a currency. Question is basically a demand for information. And I think the quality of your questions really matters. And the number of your questions. Like, I as a general principle, I try not to ask two questions in a row. Because it's a demand for information, and it makes the other person uncomfortable, even the best questions. So I still believe, like, limiting your questions in comparison to your statements. So I want to have a good ratio of questions versus statements. I think ultimately when I see two people who know each other, who are sort of in rapport, who feel comfortable with each other, who are having a good time, like best friends maybe, they're usually making more statements to each other. They're sort of just expressing themselves. In turn, and I think that's where ultimately I'm trying to make the interaction happen with the girl that you just met.
is trying to get both of you just expressing, blowing up those expression bubbles until eventually they stick together, I think is a great concept. And then, you know, once they stick together, then you find yourself in her bedroom. It's a good thing. So I like to see that. But I think you know, typically guys overuse questions, and they don't use enough I statements. They don't sort of show the person where they're coming from, and it makes another person feel uncomfortable. So in a way, questions are like taking money out of the bank, and statements are putting money into the bank. You don't want to get your account to zero. You want to keep a really healthy balance, and that means being able to make enough I statements to be able to reveal enough about yourself, because if you reveal about yourself, then it's natural for another person to reveal themselves. But if you just go in and ask a question, you're just saying, reveal, tell me about yourself. It's not enough to seduce somebody, because they don't make a connection to you, they don't get to know you, they don't feel comfortable with you. So it's a matter of balancing it out and giving enough of yourself to make the other person feel comfortable with that.
That's very true. I was going to say that I do that in interviews. I'm interviewing somebody that I'll maybe make a small confession of vulnerability,
mm-hmm.
you know, and before them, because, you know, it's sort of leading, and it's weird. It's a big difference. I don't do it on purpose, I guess, or maybe I do. But if I just say, you know, tell me about your relationship, tell me about your girlfriend, I might say, well, you know, I've been having a situation with my girlfriend. I'm curious what your situation is like.
Right.
And for some reason, they're more open that way.
Yeah, exactly. And I think like a lot of the best interviewers use that technique, where they give as much as they get, or they give some things, especially vulnerabilities,
right.
to make the other person feel comfortable revealing themselves.
Right.
And I think that's still key. And
for they say, hey, I'm Neil. I was never breastfed as a child.
There you go. I'm going to try that line and see how that works for me. We get another beep going on. But I think it's a matter of really understanding how questions affect people and the quality of your questions as well. There's like three types of questions. There's open-ended questions, closed-ended questions, there's leading questions. And if you really want to think about it really hard, the best types of questions are really statements. So if you think about it as a line in space, and on one side you have leading questions, which are the worst, which is basically telling somebody within the question what their answer is supposed to be, like it's a nice day outside, isn't it? If you go further in the other direction, the positive direction, you get to open-ended questions, which are like, so what do you think about today? And then you get to statements, which are basically you revealing yourself, and the other person can choose if they want to respond or not. If an open-ended question is letting the person respond any way they want, then a statement, in a sense, is the ultimate open-ended question, because it also lets the other person not respond at all. So being able to make a lot more statements makes you seem more alpha and more sure of yourself. But of course, you can't just do that, because you do try to. You usually have to guide somebody. I don't really like deep questions. I don't like the questions that sound like a psychiatrist. What did you want to be when you were a child, or what was it like growing up? And I don't like questions that have to do with the far future. So stay away from the past and the future, and try to make your questions as relevant to the moment as possible, to the now. Like people say, like, what did you do last year for Thanksgiving? I mean, who cares, right? It should be, what did you do yesterday? What are you doing now? What are your thoughts now? What are your latest thoughts? It's like being more relevant to the now is really important for seduction, because ultimately you're going to be making out with her in the moment, not in the future and not in the past. So stay away from those two areas.
Exactly. When I interview musicians, I don't ask questions that I think I need to know. I ask the questions, the best answers I get, or ask the questions that they're probably asking themselves.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. I'm going to start using that. The questions they're asking themselves, because those are, in a way, to me, that's like very much in the moment. If they're asking those questions to themselves, you're a brilliant man, Neil. So I think don't ask deep questions, but ask questions that require work on the other person's part. You want to get them working, because people don't value things for the intrinsic value. They value things based on how much work they've had to put out to acquire them. So it's not asking deep questions, and somehow I got that rap. But no, I don't like asking deep questions. I like asking real questions.
You make
I like
fun
questions
too.
Fun, yeah,
you
fun too, exactly.
Fun, like your, you know, movie of your life kind of thing.
Yeah, like that. You know, one of my favorite, like, yeah, you know, what's the movie of your life? What would it be rated? I also like, you know, who would you kill if you could kill? You know, what is it, marry, kill, and fuck, marry, kill?
I love that game.
That's a great game. Things like that, like ask interesting questions that require the other person to work. One of my favorite questions is what's your story? Which, you know, the response the girls give me that usually, they say I don't have a story, which is okay, because the idea of asking open-ended questions really, when it comes down to it, is to try to show your value, because only people of high value ask open-ended questions, require the other person to work.
So if, for instance, and this is something I do in the seminar a lot, I'll do a demonstration where I'll come in and I'll sort of act like we're coworkers with somebody, and I'll ask a lot of closed-ended questions, and I'll turn to the audience. I'll say, so what's my role at the company? And they say, well, you're a peon. And then I come in and I just ask open-ended questions. So what's the status of that report? Tell me about your day. Those things, when I ask those big for big, lots of volume requiring the other person to work, inevitably everybody says, you're the boss. And you sub-communicate your value by asking for big things, asking for the other person to work. Now, the ironic thing about this is that it doesn't necessarily mean they have to answer the question or actually make work. In a sense, the only thing that is really important is that you communicate your expectation that they will work. You sub-communicate your value by your expectations for other people. So even if that expectation is not met, as long as you are not put off by that, you show that you have high value. It's kind of a crazy thing. I've thought a lot about this, Neil.
It's great stuff. I like that. I think that's a new idea for me, and I like that. I think that makes sense. So cool.
So,
asking the question about questions, even though it wasn't a statement.
Yeah, one quick follow-up. So if you ask it,
we're being, you know what?
Okay, well, just ask the quick question, and I'll give you a really quick response.
So if somebody says, like, what's your story, and you don't get any sort of a response, do you just kind of say, okay, and continue on with statements from that point?
I usually say, good, I hate people with stories. Let's go beat the crap out of some people with stories.
Good question. Fair enough.
Okay, next.
Thanks a lot.
All right, bye-bye.
Next, we have Travis. Your line is open.
Hey, Travis.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Hi, what's happening, man?
Groovy. All right, well, kind of going back to what you guys were saying not too long ago about how there are all these different gurus, all these different schools of thought. I'm kind of a guy that it's kind of like crack for me, you know, and so unfortunately I take a lot of different pieces and try to string them together, which you were mentioning might not be such a great idea. And I have kind of a short list of some commonalities between the schools myself. And I was just wondering if you guys saw any commonalities that are strung through the all the schools of thought and all the gurus, and because I know it can be really confusing. I've experienced it myself.
Well, you know, I'm gonna let Neil answer this one.
Okay.
Wrestling with the phone because they're both dying.
Give me that.
I wonder if it's the same thing or not. Here's my thought, because I'm going to be a total fucking asshole and use an example. Here you're on the call, right? It's your only time talking to juggling style possibly ever in your life, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You're asking us a question about the commonalities between different fucking schools of pickup. How does this help you in your game in approaching women? Your crack should be meeting women. Your crack should not be studying all the schools of seduction and making a list of their fucking commonalities. Your crack should really be, and I know you can say, well, I'm just trying to find out what works for me the best, but no. Like, I want your crack to be being in the field. I want your crack to be approaching. I want you to come here with a real question on a real sticking point. And I really think, like, what you're saying right now, I'm using you as an example, and this is, like, I'm always, like, harsh on one phone call on this thing. Maybe you're my one, but I'm really saying this in a helpful, constructive way. You're not being a good student of seduction by trying to learn everything about the seduction community and the gurus. You're being good students of seduction if you're out there in the field doing it. Right now you're just sort of, you know, I just don't know what to say other than, like, I want you to change your approach to learning. And
all right.
I want your, you probably have enough fucking information. In fact, I want you to drop out of the Style Life Academy and go, no, but for real. Like, I'm not joking that I want you just to stop learning, stop comparing different methods, and go out there in the field and just constantly approach for, like, months straight, and maybe you already do. And see what you learn by yourself and on your own, and figure out kind of what works for you.
StyleLife.com presents Style Life Academy.
Bits is exclusive.
StyleLife.com presents Style Life Academy.
Okay, I don't know if he's there, but he's going to go sergeant. He's going sergeant right now. I'm going to be good cop to your bad cop, Neil.
Okay.
and I'm going to say that
just to kind of answer the question where I think he's going is, I do think there are commonalities. I think there are sort of similar philosophies at the extreme endpoints. As far as, like, you know, if that's important or not, I don't know. You know, there's a thing on my own board, the Charisma Arts board, where some people, a guy came on and said, you know, you guys shouldn't even be talking about the She Belt Sarging, which I, you know, there's a lot of truth to that. But at the same time, I think a lot of people just find it interesting. I think when it comes down to it, like, I find human interaction interesting, and I find different ideas and philosophies about that interesting. Now, I think the crucial thing, and it's hard for me to say in this case, and you may be right in this case, that he may be putting his sort of interest in the styles and stuff ahead of his own development or ahead of his own action, you know, taking action thing, which I think is really important. I just want to say, to go along with what you're saying, Neil, I always tell guys, don't think about pickup before you go do pickup, because you just end up thinking about it and you get in your head and it makes you nervous. I say the best thing to do is just go out and do it, and usually do it for an hour or 45 minutes. Don't make it a huge thing. Just make it a regular part of your life. And then don't think about it until after you're done with it. And then when you come back home, write in your journal, think about what you could have done better, think about your thoughts and write those all down, and then put it away until next time. But I think it is unhealthy when guys think so much about it or read so much about it, especially before they go do it. I think there is a part of that, there is a place for that, and I think I agree with you. I think a lot of guys put sort of that sort of reading about it and all this stuff, the styles, before actually going and doing it. I do think that is important.
Yeah, and by the way, if I get up on a soapbox about it, it's only because I want guys to learn, and I feel like if I'm seeing it, maybe a behavior that may be detrimental, only because I did it myself. Like, I would go out with the fucking guys, and we'd sit there and we'd gossip about, you know, how does Ross Jeffries get laid? Does Mystery get laid only because he does this? Does so-and-so do this because of so-and-so? Why? Who stole what from so-and-so? And, like, I would sit there and we'd talk about it for fucking hours, and I felt like that was probably the most detrimental stage of my learning and development. So I've been through it, and when I hear it, I just want to, like, cut it off and be like, you know, and say what I said before. So anyway, probably not the answer you expected.
Travis, are you there?
No, but that was great, because I was nervous about talking to you guys just because you guys, you know, and then Sal comes out with an answer I didn't expect, which was my biggest fear, but it wasn't really a big deal at all, so now I'm sitting here grinning from ear to ear, so thanks a lot.
Oh, thank you, Jeff. Man, that is a fucking awesome response. You know, my favorite.
And certainly, you know, try not to be nervous talking to us. Although, you know, I was nervous. I get nervous all the time about stuff,
right.
And a lot of it's just because I know something's coming up and I got to go do it.
Right.
I believe a person could be nervous about wadding up a piece of paper and throwing it into the trash,
right,
if they really thought about it too much.
I got one question for you, Travis, because this is true for me. I'm nervous before approaches. I'm nervous before going on stage. I'm nervous before book readings, but once I go out there and do it, get on stage, make that approach, I'm completely comfortable, but I'm always nervous before it. How about you?
Okay.
Awesome. All right, thanks for calling in.
Take care.
All right, bye, Travis.
I like the name Travis. I'm going to change my name.
I like Travis, too. It's a cool name. I like saying it a lot. I'm going to call the next person Travis. Okay, who's next?
Okay, next we do have Keith. Your line is open.
Casey?
Keith.
Keith. Okay, thanks, Stephanie.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, Keith.
Hi, Keith.
Wayne was, didn't finish his thought about, immediately communicating, sexual intention, and I wonder if he could talk more about that, because that's been a problem of mine. I, you know, meet, a girl I'm interested in, and then I'll just, not communicate the sexual intention. I'll just kind of waste time being platonic, trying to entertain her, and juggler to start off with saying something. You got to communicate sexual interest immediately, and I wonder if you could talk more about that.
Yeah, I don't know if I would say immediately. I mean, there are schools of thought about doing that. I believe you communicate your sexual interest as soon as you can make it believable. So what I mean is believable in that there's something unique that you find sexy about her beyond what she looks like. And I still want you approaching the hottest girls that you're attracted to. Don't get me wrong, but I want you to find out unique things about them. And then as soon as you find out something unique, or at least you can sell it as unique. And when I say unique, I mean not just unique, but something about her that affects you. You got to show your greed, in a sense. You have to show that there's a reason that you are attracted to her. as soon as you find those things, I believe you tell her. In my experience, that's worked so much better than when I didn't do that. I gave a talk in London earlier this year, and I was fortunate enough, had a lot of people show up. And one of the people who showed up was this really hot girl, and it was really difficult to actually have a conversation to her because she had the cleavage kind of sticking out, so I was trying to hold my hand sort of over the view of her boobs. But she said to me, she said, "Wayne, why is it that I have this problem?" And I said, "What's your problem?" She said, "Well, I went out with this guy that I really like, I'm really attracted to, and we ended up sitting on my bed and talking at 3 o'clock in the morning. Why didn't he make a move? Why didn't anything happen?" And I said, "Well, you know, a lot of guys have a hard time escalating and they don't really understand how to, and you know, he was probably shy and just was afraid of rejection and all those things." And she said, "Oh, okay." And I said, "Well," I asked her, I said, "Will you see this guy again?" She said, "Probably not." And I think it just goes to show you that there are those escalation windows I think you just have to jump through.
So fucking true, man. That was my problem for so long. I mean, mystery always rising about the time I met this beautiful girl out of the club. She came back to my place. We stuck into a hot tub, and I just sat there with her, too scared to make a move.
Right.
And then we, like, walked home together. I was too scared to hold her hand or make a move, and then she left, and I never saw her again. And my fear was that if I made a move, she'd think I was just like all those other guys and you know, think that I just wanted for sex. But the fact was I lost her by not making a move.
Yeah, I think that's probably what happened. And I think that you don't want to be like all the other guys, but believe me, if you key your sexual interest to something about her